begin contrasting Shaul HaMelech, that's King Saul, versus King David, that David HaMelech. Both of them were kings of the Jewish people. As we know... King Shaul, Shaul HaMelech, he was number one. He was the first king, and he was from the tribe of Benjamin. Even though it says in the Bible that the kingship's going to go from King David, the Davidic dynasty, but some say that's only once the Davidic dynasty got started. But clearly, Shaul was the first king, and he was appointed by a prophet. The prophet Samuel, appointed King Saul, and he gave him the job he gave King Saul to do was to destroy Amalek, to destroy the Hitlers, the anti-Semites. That's what Amalek represents. It was a people who, Amalek is a people when the Jewish people were traveling in the desert after they left the Exodus from Egypt, and they traveled in the desert for 40 years. So in the beginning, after all the miracles that happened in Egypt and the splitting of the Red Sea, so Amalek attacked the Jewish people. And what was unique about this attack is usually when you attack a nation, there's something in it for you. Like, okay, let me take over the land. Let me get something here. There was nothing in it for Amalek because the Jewish people didn't have a land. They were coming. They were slaves in Egypt. It was an attack against God that they wanted to show the Jewish people aren't special. And in fact, the example they give is they say, let's say you go on a tourist. You go on a trip somewhere, and it says, hottest water in the world, don't jump in or something, and they have all the warnings, and someone jumps in, and they get all burned. But in the eyes of others, they cooled it off. In other words, like someone has a great alarm system saying, you'll never be able to break into this bank, and someone tries and they don't succeed, psychologically, it's lowered their alarm. Okay, you didn't succeed, but now already it's on the table. Maybe I'll be able to do it. So Amalek called off right after all the miracles that just happened. It was an attack against God that he picked the Jewish people. That's why Amalek is the ultimate, that's the Amalek, that's Haman, that's Hitler, the people whose purpose is to destroy the Jewish people. So Samuel the prophet told King Saul, I have a job for you now that you're king, because it says in the Talmud that there are three things when the Jewish people enter the land of Israel, they have three special commandments that they can't do before. Number one is to appoint a king. You can't have a king unless you have a country. So therefore, once you enter the land of Israel, then you can appoint a king. Secondly is to destroy the vicious anti-Semitic Amalek. That was number two. And number three is to build the temple. So the Jews were in Israel now, so Samuel the prophet reminded King Saul, now's your job, now that we have a king, God wants you to go out and destroy all the people from Amalek. So King Saul listened mostly. He went ahead, he attacked Amalek, and he probably destroyed over 90% of Amalek. He left over the king of Amalek, he left over Agag, and he left over a bunch of animals, a bunch of sheep. And then what happened was, so then Samuel comes back to King Saul and says, what's going on? You didn't listen to me. You didn't listen to God. He said, what are you talking about? I did everything. And so he says, what's those animals I hear? Oh, okay, so he came up with the reason for the animals. But interesting, how could King Saul say that he did it, that he listened to God's command, if we know he didn't? Because interesting, there's another Talmud, another page in the Talmud, and it also has something to do with Purim, where the Talmud says that when Haman made the decree to kill all men, women, and children, he was able to accomplish more than the 48 male prophets and more than the 7 women prophets. That why? Because what does a prophet do? They try to, you know, persuade, rebuke the people to do better. So they were rebuking the people, but no one listened. But unfortunately, when there's a decree of death on you, it sometimes that wakes you up. Not that we want to wake up before that happens. But so when they had the decree of Haman, so they woke up the Jewish people and they repented. So Saul's saying, like, what do you mean? Haman's only here because what happened was the king he left over, who's supposed to kill, slept with his wife or some woman that night. And out of that union came Haman, who was like a Hitler. So because he didn't listen to God, that's why God said, do it now before Haman's created. So he said, what do you mean? Haman was good. He got the Jewish people to do tshuva. What do you want from me? So he said, it's not the way it works. Your job is to listen to what I tell you to do. You know, God will take care of the rest. So either way, so that was the sin of King Saul. That King Saul left over. He was supposed to destroy the people from Amalek. He did 90% of the job. However, he left over the king who slept with the woman who eventually Haman came out of. So therefore he was punished, and King and this Samuel the prophet said zero tolerance. Even though we're beginning baseball season soon and 3 strikes and you're out, but Samuel said it's not baseball season, 1 strike and you're out, that's it, you messed up. You are no longer going to be king. We're going to impeach you. We're taking you. And there's no vote on the impeachment. When God tells the prophet to take him down, it's over. There's no being acquitted. So therefore, that's what happened. King Saul sinned, and he was punished. He was revoked. The kingship was revoked. That's the tale of one king. Let's contrast it with another king. King David.
Excuse me, Rabbi. You said that Haman, I lost you there.
Haman.
Yeah.
Haman. Yeah. Haman came from Amalek. The one that if Samuel would have killed the king like he was supposed to, there wouldn't have been a Haman. So he left. Okay. He just left him. You know, he left him over, and then he had his wife. He slept with a woman, and from that union came out Haman.
Okay.
So we see 1 strike and you're out for King Saul. Let's see about King David. So King David was also involved in a very serious sin, crime, however you want to call it. Because what did he do? What was King David's sin or mistake he made? So what happened was King David, when he was the king, he was I guess he was walking around and he saw this woman he was very attracted to. Her name was Bathsheba. And unfortunately, Bathsheba was married. So the king could have many wives, but you can't have a married woman. You can't take someone else's wife. So he devised a plan. He said, you know what? I'm going to send, you know, and what happened was, and he, so her husband was, you know, was out in the war. You know, they were fighting the war, and her husband was, she was alone, her husband was fighting the war. So he committed adultery with this woman, Bathsheba. And then he said he didn't want anyone to know it was from him, so he commanded his her husband to come back home. So they'll think when she gets pregnant, they'll think it's Uri, you know, the husband's kid, not mine. But he didn't want to come. He didn't listen to the king. He didn't want to come back. And in fact, David sent into the front lines of the battle, and he was killed. And then he took Bathsheba as a wife. So number one, it's not as bad as it looks. I mean, it's pretty bad. It looks pretty. The optics are worse than the legal. Legally speaking, the Talmud says anyone who said David sinned is mistaken. Like, what do you mean mistaken? Like, I know adultery when I see it. What do you mean? So you have to know a couple of technical legal rules. That one is, during the time of King David, and not just his time, but during the time of King David, anytime there's the concern is that anytime, it doesn't have to be during wartime, but wartime is, it's a more of an issue, that in Jewish law, that you have to, you get married, and if you get a divorce, you need a get. You have to get a legal divorce document, or else if you don't get a divorce, then technically, legally speaking, you are still married. So today, as we all know, a man can only have one wife, and a woman can only have one husband. But biblically speaking, the reason why a man could have many wives is because by a woman, because we know who, in other words, if a woman has different husbands, so we don't know who the father is. It could be, so you never know, is it a Cohen, Levi, is it a Jew, whatever the case may be. Well, we know it's Jewish if the woman's Jewish. But by a man, we know, it goes, so legally speaking, back in the day, but today, Chayim Rabbeinu Gershon, practically speaking, everyone has one wife or one husband. But back in the day, in biblically speaking, when a man could have more than one wife, so the rule was, but it was for the protection of the woman. Else the woman, because what happened was, if the husband disappeared, and no one knew what happened to the husband, so the wife is stuck. Like, how she can't remarry because if the husband's dead, so then obviously you don't need a get. There's two ways a married woman could remarry. Either her husband dies, so automatically she's no longer married, or if the husband's alive, you give a get. So the problem is, if you can't find the husband, you don't even know where he is. So if you don't know if he's dead, so you don't know if he's alive. So it's a big problem. So what they did was, especially during wartime, every married soldier is what they had a legal document. It was a divorce on stipulation. If the husband does not come back within a certain requisite time, whatever the time was, so then the woman could remarry if she wants. In other words, we don't want to have the woman stuck and they can't remarry. So the FO is built in that any husband who did not come back from war, automatically the wife became single and she could remarry. She doesn't have to worry. So technically speaking, David didn't commit adultery because Uriah died and never came back. So basically, she was divorced, legally speaking. And secondly, as well, that technically speaking, he also deserved the death penalty, because there's another rule that if you don't listen to the king, he could put you to death. Morid b'malchus. So therefore, Uriah didn't listen to David when he said to come back home. So therefore, but either way, but so that's what I mean. Technically speaking, he didn't violate adultery. He didn't violate murder, because technically speaking, he didn't listen. But that's just technical. I'll get to the moral issue right shortly. So either way, so what happened was, King David committed adultery, and he later married Bathsheba, By the way, the child he had died. Like, that child that she became pregnant with, anyway, the child died. And also, David had many tragedies in his life, and his own son, Avshalom, tried to kill him. It was because of, punishment for what he did. But even though he was punished and things happened to him, nevertheless, King David remained king. So King David, on the surface, committed adultery. He was involved in, someone being killed. And yet, it wasn't Samuel the prophet. He wasn't alive anymore. It was Nathan the prophet. Didn't take him away from the kingship. So the question is, how come when it came to King Saul, one strike and you're out? But when it came to King David, one strike and you're not out. We went back to baseball. He gets at least three strikes. He didn't get out. He wasn't thrown out. So what's the difference? Why was King Saul's kingship revoked and not King David? So there are two schools of thought on two possibilities. They both could be true, but two different answers. So the first answer is as follows. It's from Rav Yosef Albo. He was a big Spanish philosopher. He wrote the book, the book of Ikarim, the book of Ikar is a main thing as opposed to like a secondary thing. So he writes about different things. So he at one point, I think this book, which isn't so popular today, it's also because it's very long. Our attention spans aren't as long anymore, but it's very long. But he, I think since this might have been that one of the first books that were translated into other languages. But either way, so it's a very famous Sefer, Jewish book, and he's a big philosopher. He lived a little after Maimonides, and he says as follows. He says, you know what the difference is? I'll tell you the difference. The difference is King Saul's sin was part of being, he sinned as being a king. In other words, it was only the king who had the commandment to destroy Amalek. It wasn't on the individual. That's a discussion, but we're assuming that if you see, even if in theory you knew someone was from Amalek, we wouldn't do it anyway practically because you're not going to spend the rest of your life in jail because of it. But in theory, some assume that the mitzvah is only once you appoint a king. That's why right after he was appointed king, King Saul, so then he got the commandment to destroy Amalek. So King Saul sinned. His sin was a sin as being a king. It was a communal sin. He was acting as the king when he sinned. The prophet says, "You are the king of Israel. You have a commandment to destroy Amalek." And as the king, King Saul the king, not the private individual, Saul the king did not keep his kingship duties. Hence, if you didn't keep your kingship duties, hence we get rid of you as king. However, even if you want to argue that King David's sins were worse in theory, adultery or letting someone be killed, even though we said he really technically didn't violate them, but they were personal. It was a personal weakness. He didn't do it as King David. He was walking by the street. He saw this beautiful woman he liked. And he did it part of a personal weakness. He had a desire. So the difference is, if you're the king, and in fact, that's the rule also in the U.S. As we know, there's something called an impeachment in the U.S. You can impeach not only the president but other people as well. So one of the criteria are they call it. He has to do high crimes and misdemeanors. It has to fit a certain standard. You can't just impeach anyone for any sin. There are certain specific guidelines of what a king has to, what a president has to do wrong to become impeached. And that's why there are some scholars who argue that if the president does a private thing, let's say he breaks into someone's house and steals something, or he goes into somewhere else and does a private sin, it's a discussion whether you could put him in jail or not, but it's not an impeachable crime. The certain crimes, some things are only impeachable if they follow the strict guidelines of the Constitution. So they're called high crimes and misdemeanors. So King Saul violated high crimes and he violated the sin as a king. King David sinned as a private individual. His sin had nothing to do with being the king. He committed adultery. That has nothing to do with being the many non-kings who commit adultery. It has nothing to do with being a king. So therefore, so even though he repented and had to do tshuva, but it wasn't a sin that he had to be thrown out of the kingship for, because it wasn't a sin that involved the king. Like they give a parable. Let's say a king has two scribes that work for him, and they write different legal documents, you know, and that the king has to like write out all these documents. So you have one scribe who wrote the document was good, but let's say someone took that document and used it in a wrong scenario, in an illegal method they shouldn't have done. But the document was fine. And another scribe forged the document. So the parable goes, the king got rid of the scribe that forged the document, but he left the scribe that the document was misused. Why? Because his job as a scribe is to write a document. So if I wrote a good document, I'm not in charge of who gets the document. Whoever has to deliver the document has to do what they have to do. But if you're a scribe, your only job is to write it. If you forge a document, then I don't want you as a scribe anymore. So too over here, King Saul, he sinned as being a king, hence he got deposed. One strike and you're out. But King David's sin was more as an individual, not as a king, and hence he wasn't thrown out, he wasn't impeached as being king. That's approach number one. It's the question on it, there's a little question on it, is it's true that David sinned as a king, but as a person, but it's only because he was a king, he was able to send the husband to the front lines, and only because he was a king, he was fit to the death penalty. So that's one school of thought. We'll give another school. So the second school of thought is we won't make a distinction between a public sin or a private sin. Let's assume they're equally bad. So then we're back to our original question. So why was King Saul's sin worse than King David's sin? And the answer is as follows. The sins were the same. Let's assume the sins were equal. That wasn't the problem. The problem is what happened after the sin, after the mistake. So let's find out. Let's go to look in Navi and see what happened. So after King Saul went ahead and left over Agag the king and the sheep, the prophet came to him and said, "What are you doing? You didn't follow what we told you to do." So what was the first thing King Saul did? What are you talking about? I did everything right. Hakiyamti dvar. Are you nuts? He was in total denial. I did everything. I didn't do anything wrong. What do you want from me? And then after Samuel said to him, "What are you talking? What are those sheep I hear?" Then he said, "Oh yeah, that's not my fault. The people wanted the sheep. I had to keep my people happy. They said we want the sheep, so I left it for them." So we see two big mistakes, and we don't have to look too far in the news today about leaders, but what are the two big mistakes some leaders like making, and King Saul was guilty of the same mistake, is number one, denial. I didn't do anything wrong. What do you want from me? And then that doesn't work. Well, okay, let's blame someone else. It wasn't me. Someone else is supposed to do it. Ultimately, if you're the king, if you're the leader, you're in control. So the King Saul's big mistakes wasn't the sin itself. If he would have asked for forgiveness and admitted his sin, he'd be okay. But he was in denial and he started blaming others. That's not Jewish leadership. Jewish leadership is you got to own it. You got to own the problem and you got to deal with it and admit. Let's contrast it with King David, what happened. The prophet came to King David and he said, so when King David took the married woman for a wife, so the prophet was politically correct. He said, "King David, I have a question for you. Let me ask you a question." And he made up a hypothetical. He said, let's say there are two people. There's a wealthy individual. He's a billionaire. He owns a lot of property. In this case, they were talking about animals. That's it. So he owned thousands of animals. And there was a next door neighbor who is very poor. He owns one animal, one sheep. So this rich person decides, you know, I'm having a big party. I'll invite all my friends. And instead of taking one of his hundreds of animals, he goes next door. He takes the only animal of the poor person. So he says, what do you think, King David? That person's terrible. He's a narcissist. He's evil. He's selfish. That's a terrible thing to do. And Nathan, the prophet, said, I'm glad you agree. You are the one. That's you. That the King David, like all kings, you could have 18 wives. You could have many wives. And you went ahead and took someone else's wife? You're the guy. And you know what, King David? King David, who could have had a lot of excuses. As we said, legally speaking, it was not adultery because he divorced his wife already. And the person was worthy of death because he listened to the king. King David, who had excuses, did not use it. He said, you know what? Chatasi le'lokim. You are right. I am terrible. I did a terrible thing. I'm a sinner. Even though, technically speaking, I could justify it, I'm not even going to try. Morally, it's the despicable. It's awful. I did a terrible thing, and I have to repent on this. And that's why David was allowed to remain king. King David, King Saul, denial and blame others. He doesn't know what Jewish leadership is all about. But if you're going to be a Jewish leader, you have to be able to... Everyone, we're all human. We're all going to make mistakes. But the trick is what happens after mistake. If you go in denial and start blaming others, you're just going to dig deeper. You're going to make things worse. You're not fit for leadership. But if you admit your mistake and say, yeah, I did something wrong, I have to change, you're right, and actually be sincere about it, so then we give you a second chance, perhaps a third chance as well. And in fact, that's what we see, that the greatness, we find that by Yehuda, where it says the kingship, Jacob's son Yehuda, Judah, we say the kingship is gonna come from Yehuda. What did Yehuda do? Yehuda was in a similar, very embarrassing situation that basically he slept with a woman. He didn't know who it was. And only she knew. And no one knew. No one would have known. And the woman herself wasn't going to embarrass Judah. She was going to give up her life and she was going to die. And no one would have known. So imagine Judah, this person who no one knows, no one will care about. I could justify, well, okay, let them die. I'm the king. I'm an important person. Yet Judah said, no, I have to admit my sin. That woman's a righteous woman. I'm not going to let her die. It's the sin's on me. I did wrong. And that's where kingship comes from, because kingship's going to have a lot of, any position of power is going to come with a lot of difficult situations. And it's impossible not to make mistakes. Everyone's going to make mistakes. We want to know, what are you going to do after you make a mistake? If you admit your mistake and move on, great. Then you're still fit to become king. But if you're in denial and blame others, you're not fit for leadership. And that's why, in fact, that's why we have a saying the rabbis tell us. It says, but there's a verse that says that seven times the righteous falls. And, So the commentators explain, everyone falls. The leaders, the righteous and the wicked both fall. Seven times is just an illustration. It could be five, it could be 100. The difference is, the difference between a righteous person and a wicked person is, the wicked person stays down and doesn't improve, doesn't change. But the righteous person gets up, yeah, I made a mistake, I fell, I got to pick myself. I got to do better next time. I don't go down into depression. I don't go into denial. I work hard on improving myself. And we see in many cases, we see one of the great commentators we ever had, Rashi. He's one of the great commentators on the Bible, on Navi, on everything. And they point out in many places, Rashi writes, around probably over 30 places he writes, and I don't know the answer to this. The point was no one asked him. It wasn't like someone asked him a question and he said, I don't know the answer. He volunteered. He doesn't write on every verse. He volunteered it to show people that don't think I know everything. There's a lot of things I don't know. And therefore, if you're going to be successful in anything in life, you're going to be in any intellectual pursuit, you need intellectual honesty. You have to admit when you're wrong. And it's easy to admit you're wrong when everyone else knows you're wrong, when you get caught. But, you know, even that we see, even when you're caught, we find a lot of leaders that are still in denial and blaming others. But even if you assume that it's very hard to admit. And that's why it says by Rashi, who was one of the great commentators, he was willing to even say, no one asked me, but I'll tell you. There are a lot of things I don't understand. Don't think I know everything. And in fact, there were two great rabbis, two different stories where they applied for the rabbinic job. So one was, one applied to, like, it was the top position in the yeshiva in Volozhin. And that was that's where the biggest yeshiva was in Europe at one point, or not the biggest, the top one. So the story goes, the rabbi applied, so how do you test him? He gives a class. And in the middle of the class, he sits down and says, wait a second, I just realized what I'm saying is wrong, and that's it, sorry, end of my class. So you would see, the issue is no one knew he was wrong. He could have made up anything he wanted. But anyway, of course, he got the job. They said, if you're honest enough to tell us that what you said was wrong, we didn't even know, we want you as our leader of the yeshiva. And also another great rabbi, Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, who was one of the great Jewish leaders in Israel, a similar story happened where someone asked him a question in the middle of his class, and he said, you're right, I don't know, sorry. And he sat down, and he went home to his wife and said, it wasn't a good day, I'm not getting the job, because somebody asked me a question, I couldn't answer it. And that was back in the day before phones. So about a couple of hours later, someone knocked on his door and said, we want you to take the job. If someone's as honest as you, we want you as to take the position. So we see many times your being honest even gets rewarded, even right away, but you can't expect that. But the point being is, it's not so much the communal sin versus the private sin that separated Saul and David. It's what happens after the mistake, after the sin, after you break the law. Do you go into denial mode or blame everyone else? Or do you take responsibility and say, you know, I could do better. It was a mistake, chatasi. It was terrible what I did. Of course, morally it was despicable, even if it was technically okay, I don't care. I feel terrible, and I'm going to repent on that. And that's where we find the difference between the tale of two kings. How come Saul, one strike and you're out, but King David was permitted more than one strike? And why either approach number one was because King Saul was a communal sin, as he acted as a king. If your sin was as a king, so I depose you as a king. But King David was as a private individual, so it didn't fit the high crimes and misdemeanors which you need for the impeachment, and hence he was allowed on. Or perhaps, no, let's assume communal, private are the same. They're both terrible. They're both equal. But the difference was what happened afterwards. King Saul was in denial, and he started blaming others after he did something wrong. That's not the way. Jewish leadership is King David. Chatasi l'Hashem. I made a mistake, and now I'm going to repent, and I'm going to change. And that's why we see where it's King David, it was Moses, it was Queen Esther. That is the way of a Jewish leadership. And in fact, interesting, in Hebrew, the word to admit is that hodah, is admittance, is the same, you know, when you agree to something, is the same thing, you know, when you admit, like we say, modim anachnu lach, thank you, is the same word, is the same root as the Hebrew word admit, to admit. What's the connection between thank you and admittance? We're talking about God here, is in order to be able to say thanks to God, or for that matter, to be thanks to anyone, you have to admit that you need other people to help you. No one lives in an island. We all need help from our, you know, friends, family, whoever it might be. But you have to admit that you need help from someone. Once you admit you need help, then you can give thanks. But if you're in denial, in fact, there's another famous story that was, this person went to this rabbi, let's say, and the rabbi said, sorry, the meat is not kosher. You have to throw out the cow, a very expensive cow, let's say worth $1,000, right? And he had no problem listening. He said, okay, if it's not kosher, it's not kosher. Okay. And then the same person has a business fight with someone else. So he goes to the same rabbi. And the rabbi says, I'm voting against you. You owe the person $100. So you figure, big deal. He just lost it. So he starts going crazy. Are you kidding me? I'm not paying $100. You don't know what you're talking about. So the question is, how come? Somebody asked one of the rabbis. I don't get this. When the rabbi told him he's going to lose $1,000, he didn't care. But when he told him he's going to lose $100, he went crazy. He says the answer is because when he lost $1,000, it was no contest. It was, that's it. Okay, if it's not kosher, it's not me versus anyone else, that's it. But to say I lost and he won, that rascal, I'm not admitting that he won the court case. That takes a lot more strength. And that's why, as they in one of the yeshivas in Europe, there was Slobodka, where they always built up people, but in the Vardik is they always trash people. You know, that was the way of trying to become better. Put that was the school where they went to, is you always put people down, not to make fun. You put them down so they could grow. You could always do better. So for instance, in this yeshiva, when they used to learn, so let's say there are two people studying together, so one person, you know, they're arguing, so the person says, yeah, you're right. So the other one said, don't say you're right, say I am wrong. He said, what's the difference? You're right. No, it's a lot harder to say I am wrong than say you are right. So therefore, we have to get used to saying that the person has to get used to saying they are wrong, because that's the first thing in order to have, to recognize hakara satov, to recognize the good that others do to us. We have to realize that, you know, we need other people, and that's why it's the same word. The same word of thanks is the same words as admin. That was the greatness of the Jewish leadership, and those are the tale of two kings. Why King Saul only got one strike, and King David got many.